He didn't send forage for the animals in the Confederate Army, and there are heart-rending accounts of Confederate horses literally dying in the traces, Confederate horses that pulled cannons and so forth, lined up to be surrendered, and the horses collapsing and dying of starvation and exhaustion in the road at Appomattox. But generally a very lenient set of terms that Grant offered. None of the Confederates would be taken into custody. They would all simply sign paroles and would be allowed to go home. There was one person who was not at the surrender who should have been there, George Gordon Meade, who had commanded the Army of the Potomac ever since Gettysburg, was not present at the surrender. Many Union generals were. Meade was not. I think that is the affront at Appomattox. Meade certainly should have been there for this final act in the Virginia drama. Lee offered Grant his sword at one point. Grant refused it. The two shook hands. Grant later remembered that he was, as he put it, sad and depressed at the downfall of a foe who had fought so long and valiantly and had suffered so much for a cause, though the cause was, I believe, one of the worst for which people ever fought. Lee rode away from the McLean house. Some of his men crowded around him when he got back to the camps where the Army of Northern Virginia was in place. Again, one of those several moments during the war when the bond between Lee and his men showed in sharp relief. Still tremendous affection and emotion involved there. The formal surrender took place on a cloudy April 12th. Lee and Grant were both gone by that time. Some of the regiments of the Army Northern Virginia had been reduced about to the size of a company in 1861, but they marched up out of the low ground along one fork of the Appomattox River and marched up a little hill along the old Richmond stage road into the streets of the village. Three brigades of federal troops waited for them along the streets in the village. They were under the command of Joseph J. Bartlett, who commanded the 1st Division of the 5th Corps of the Army of the Potomac. The officer nearest the Confederates, the brigade nearest the Confederates, was that of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, who had commanded on Little Round Top and then had been grievously wounded during the Petersburg campaign and would end the war as a brevet major general. Joshua Chamberlain later claimed that he commanded the federal troops who received the surrender. He didn't, but he was the closest to the Confederates as they marched up that road. Some of the Federals said that they had the sensation that there was just a mass of flags coming toward them, red flags coming toward them as the Confederates came up. The units were so small that the flags seemed to be massed together. But as they came up one at a time, the Confederate units would march, they would stop opposite the Federals, they'd step into the middle of the road, they would stack their muskets, their cartridge boxes, lay their banners down, step away, and then march on. When it was over, 28,000 men had been paroled in Appomattox, and the Army in Northern Virginia had ceased to exist. Now, Joe Johnston's army was still in the field, as were miscellaneous other Confederate forces. But when the last musket was set down at Appomattox Courthouse, the Confederacy really was dead on that April 12th because of the position that Lee and his army held in the Confederacy and in the view of those in the North and elsewhere. They had been the most important army. They'd been the most important national institution. I've emphasized this through much of this course. And it made sense that their surrender marked the end of the war for most people who were observing, not only for Confederates, but also for Federals. It was the position, the stature of Lee that led to this situation. And let me read just one quotation from late in the war that suggests the position of Lee among Confederates. This is from mid-March 1865. It's the diary of a member of Parliament named Connolly, who came into the Confederacy very late and made some astute observations about the war at that phase. He said, this is in his diary, "General Robert E. Lee is the idol of his soldiers and the hope of his country. The prestige which surrounds his person and the almost fanatical belief in his judgment and capacity is the one idea of an entire people." And a young woman who reacted to news of Lee's surrender, I think, shows how most people received the bad tidings from Appomattox and how they thought that the end of Lee and his army meant the end of the war. This young Georgia woman wrote, "Everybody feels ready to give up hope. It's useless to struggle longer," seems to be the common cry, and the poor wounded men go hobbling about the streets with despair on their faces.